The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
The Investigators presents Across the Table.
Oh, I've been running from the law. Hope they won't shoot me down soon.
I'm Todd McComas.
And I'm Jessica Knoll. And we are
The Investigators.
Try to catch me howling at the moon.
Welcome back to all our partners in crime. We hope you had a crime-free week. And if you did not, we hope that everyone is okay and that you have the right investigators on the case.
And if you don't, reach out to us. That's what we're here for.
You know what else I'm here for?
What's that?
Hostage negotiators.
Interesting. Do tell.
I did a show last week at the Funny Bone in Columbus, Ohio for a room full of, guess what? Hostage negotiators. Well, I think it was 75% hostage negotiators and then 25% just regular patrons that paid to come to the show. But man, what an honor. Like, that's the one job I never got to do myself that I really, really always wanted to do.
Wait, so you had a captive audience?
I did have a captive audience. They were held hostage the entire hour of my set by my hilarity. It was awesome because I really did. That's the one job I put in for every job I ever wanted to do on my department, and I got all of them except for hostage negotiator. I got picked to be a hostage negotiator when I did put in for it, but this captain that hated me because he used to work with me back in my old undercover days, and I was the new young bull and he was the old bull, and we just never got along, you know? And then he became my captain, which is horrible, and he blocked me from getting that job. So I spent my entire career kind of yearning to be a hostage negotiator.
I mean, I think it's fascinating, but from your perspective as an investigator, what is it why? So, I would be horrible at it. Clearly, I can't even say my words.
The reason why I always wanted to become a hostage negotiator is the same reason that I think I ended up wanting to become a cop, because my entire life, when someone needed help or there was an emergency to be handled, I truly felt like I was always the best person to handle that situation. So being a hostage negotiator, like, that's the epitome of that. Like, something bad is happening. There's definitely an emergency. Someone definitely needs your help. And there's one person who's going to be in charge of helping you through that situation. Hostage negotiator. And now they're called technically crisis negotiators now or something like that, because also, you know, person on the ledge, whatever, jumper, that's not a hostage situation.
Yeah, it runs a gamut.
Yeah. But I just want to be that person every time that situation arises. So there was one point in my career, one moment in my career where I kind of got to fill those shoes, but I wasn't supposed to. So I was at the local detective's office in my home county, Shelby County, and I'm talking to the sheriff's detectives in the detective's office, and I hear a bunch of running down the hallway. I look out, and a bunch of uniformed people are running out of the hallway, jumping in their cars in the parking lot, and taking off lights and sirens. And I'm like, holy shit, something's going down. So I go to the dispatch room, and I'm like, hey, what's happening? Where's everybody taking off to? They were like, there's a guy with a warrant for him that's refusing to come out of his house. He's barricaded, and we're getting ready to call a hostage negotiator. Now, I knew in my head there was one benefit to being state police when you're at a local PD or sheriff's office. You might be friends with them, but because we wear so many hats, they never know exactly what training or certifications you have. So I was like, I'm a hostage negotiator. And she was like, what? You are? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, well, I won't call this one then. And you can just be en route. And I'm like, I am en route. So I go to the scene. I shit you not. And they have this place surrounded. Like every officer in the three county area is out there surrounding this house. And they got officers behind their engine blocks with their guns pointed at the house and everything. So I grab the sergeant who's obviously in charge. And I'm like, hey, Sarge, what do we got? And he's like, that guy's got a warrant on him. He's refusing to come out. He's barricaded up in his house. We're getting ready to call a SWAT team. So I was like, have we established a line of communication yet? Because I'd seen the movie, The Negotiator. And that's the first thing they say when they show up at the scene. And he was like, no, we haven't. And I was like, wait a minute. You were getting ready to call a SWAT team? You haven't tried to talk to the guy yet? And he's like, no. And I'm like, all right, let me take care of it. So back in the days before cell phones, you could just have a dispatcher crisscross the address to the house and provide you with the landline number. So I call it. It rings like 30, 40 times. Finally, the guy answers. He's all groggy. He's like, hello? And I'm like, Gary, this is Detective McComas with State Police. He's like, yeah. And I'm like, did I just wake you up? And he's like, yeah, man, I worked third shift. Only been home for like an hour. I was dead asleep. And I'm like, so you have no idea what's happening outside your house right now? And he's like, no, what? And I'm like, all right, look out your window. And I see the blinds peer open. And I see these eyeballs staring out at the sea of cops behind their engine blocks with their guns drawn. And I hear him go, oh, fuck. And I'm like, yeah, oh, fuck. Like, these guys think you're refusing to come out of your house because you have a warrant on you. And they're getting ready to call a SWAT team. And he's like, oh, I'll come out right now. And I was like, no, slow down. Like, not a lot happens in Shelbyville, Indiana on a Tuesday morning. I don't need you running out of that house too quick. You know, something bad is going to happen. So I give him like a safe way out of the house. And then I see my buddy who's a state trooper and he's around the corner and love my buddy, but he's like Johnny too tactical. You know, he's like always like overdoing it. He's always a little too gung ho every time something happens. And I see him around the corner and he's got his shotgun out. He has a bandolier of shotgun shells like across his chest, which we don't even issue. Nobody even knows where he got it. He's like ordered that on Cabela's or something. So I'm like, Dennis, you're on cuffs. And I didn't necessarily want Dennis on cuffs, but I knew that something awesome always happens when Dennis gets involved. I always end up with a story. So I talk Gary out of his house and it's safely having his hands in the air. He does a 360 so we can see there's no weapons. And I'm like, all right, Dennis, get him. And this house has a real short front yard with like a 90 degree slope. And then like a 3 foot drop off from the edge of the curb to the sidewalk. And Dennis loses his footing and busts his ass. And he falls head over ass all the way down this hill. And he loses his shotgun. And it goes barrel over butt. It hits the Shelbyville police car and shatters the side window. So Dennis like picks himself up. He's got like grass, you know, sticking from his lapels and stuff. And his radio is just hanging from the lapel mic swinging. And he has split his pants from his ass to his ankle. And he is wearing these skimpy bikini brief underwear for all the world to see. It was the most hilarious moment of my entire career. And the poor Gary, he's over there trying to give himself up. And he was just like, well, now what am I supposed to fucking do? Dennis hates that story, by the way, but I love you, Dennis. It's fine. All right. Enough about me and my obsession with hostage negotiators and Dennis's bikini brief underwear. Everyone put down your shovel, kick your shoes off, and just relax. No digging on today's episode, no writing in notebooks, and no war room. Just a conversation between us and a couple of people in our industry we think you should get to know.
Todd calls them the bee's knees and the cat's pajamas. But to me, what these two do is like Mystery Science Theater meets Night Court. And that's high praise because I loved both of those shows.
This married couple's YouTube show is so unique and so damn fun. It's an utter shame they aren't a household name yet.
This is Across the Table with the Shamings. I'm so excited that you guys are here. Huge fan of your show. So I actually want to start with Jay here because you had shared something a little bit ago that I think our listeners would enjoy hearing from you about. Can you tell us your 8 Mile story?
Yeah, I surely can. And, you know, this time, hopefully when I last time when I came out of my room, Shannon was crying. So I didn't expect that to happen, but it did. Basically, 8 Miling, and I don't know if you guys know Gary Vaynerchuk, Gary V, he talks about this a lot, but, you know, in 8 Mile, you know, the whole thing, you know, Eminem's, he's a rap battler, he raps with people, and his whole thing is when he gets to the end, he wants to, you know, he's at his final battle or whatever, he gets out all his insecurities out, he raps about it, so that the guy that he's facing has nothing to say at the end. So like he talks about everything that he's worried about, you know, everything that like he knows the guy is gonna bring at him. He gets it all out. So one thing, you know, and I think about it a lot is just getting out my insecurities. So one of the things I was worried about as far as streaming is recently we went to Rex Heuerman's house because, you know, it was found out that, you know, he was allegedly the Long Island serial killer. And we had to go out into the world, out on scene and on location. And one thing that I am, you know, very insecure about is just how I look. And I talked about the shaming of Jay, basically, is what I 8 Miled and what it was, because people were always asking, what's the shaming of Jay? And basically, it was back when I started on Twitter about 10 years ago. I was worried about my weight and I wasn't doing, I wasn't losing weight and I was like insecure. So I started this account. And the idea was for the shaming of Jay was, I was going to post like a picture of myself and I was going to shame myself out to the world and say, this is me. And then like, it was going to make me somehow, you know, work on myself because every day I was going to post a picture of what I look like and I would shame myself and that would get me to lose weight and finally be consistent. Cause I'm like a yo-yo guy, like where I'll go like 6 months where I'm on like a program and I lose a bunch of weight. And then like a year later, I've gained back the weight and more. So I thought this would be a way to get me to lose the weight and keep it off. It hasn't worked because I'm heavier now than I was then. But I you know, I was thinking about, I'm going to be out in the world and people are going to see me and they're going to be like, oh, look at this guy. You know, he's like, he just looks different. So I kind of was just getting it out to the world thing. This is why I started this account. This is my insecurity. So this way, if someone sees me out there, I already talked about it. I 8 Miled it. You know, they know now if that's how I look, that's how I look. They know, like, that's kind of my story. So that was my 8 Miling. And then I came out and like I said, Shannon was, she was crying. So I didn't realize it seemed to have an effect on a lot of people that were listening or watching.
Wow, that's incredible. It's the same thing that comedians do. If there's something noticeable about their appearance, they have to address it right away on stage. I have a buddy that he was born with a deformity in both arms. He has to spend the first 10 minutes talking about it, but it's to disarm and relax everybody about this thing that's different, which you shouldn't have to do. But psychologically speaking, it seems like in your instance, it helped empower you as well. And I think maybe similarly that's the effect that a comedian or an entertainer gets when they do that. And Shannon, how does that make you feel? Because obviously you did not and do not have that same perception of your husband as he once had.
Yeah, I think that was the worst part of it, was that was not anything that he had ever even told me before. And we met on Twitter, so I've known him for a long time. And I knew his handle for a long time. I had no idea that that's what that was about. And so it really hit me that, you know, he thinks that that's something that makes him less than, because it was so upsetting to hear that. That's not at all the version of him that I see. he looks the same to me as he has for this whole time that we've been together, whether he's yo-yoed up and down or not. I still think he is the cat's pajamas. I'm obsessed with him. I don't know. So it was really upsetting to think that, like, you think you're less because, you know, you wear a different size than you did when we met or than when you were in high school. And yet there's so much more to you than what you weigh. It really bothered me that a number on a scale can make you discount every other thing that you have going for you and make you focus on this one thing.
I love that. And it's so true. And I think I told you, Jay, after you posted that, that the reason it resonated with me is, and this is one of the reasons I'm so nervous to do our live shows with you, but, you know, I come from a journalism background, obviously, and I did a couple of years of TV reporting, and I hated being in front of the camera. I hated doing live shots, and it stems from that insecurity, whether it was weight or my hair or my large forehead. See, I'm getting ahead of the game. I'm going to go ahead and put that out there. I do have a big forehead, so whatever. But, you know, it's so silly to think that that would stop me from being able to tell the stories that I wanted to tell simply because I was afraid of what I looked like as opposed to what I was saying or the stories I was telling. And so I completely get where you're coming from. And I also want to reiterate, as Shannon said, that it doesn't matter the number on the scale, whether it's 120 or 180 or 280, it's not going to matter because you're the person that everyone just rushes to be around.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And we talked about this. I think just being honest and getting things out there, people connect to that as opposed to folks who like put on this air, like they have no issues and everything is wonderful. Like I'm from the school of, I do it all the time. I'm going to tell you how I'm feeling. I'm going to tell you what I'm, and I just think that's what resonates with folks is that I'm not really trying to hide anything. I'm just trying to tell you how I'm feeling. And if people, you know, can connect with that, that's great. I love that.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
And I gotta bounce this back to Todd because you said comedians do this a lot where they get in front of it. What's your insecurity? I put mine out there. Jay put his out there. What's yours?
I would say my biggest insecurity as of late is getting old as shit. Like I look at myself, I still feel like that same, 34-year-old dude because I think that's about maybe 38 is where a guy peaks, I think, in my mind. But I still see that dude or I feel that way. But when I get in the mirror, I'm like, oh, holy shit, boy. Gray, and the body starts to sag a little more. I used to be a big workout guy. And, this things like that. But I'm settling into it, This is the one good thing about our community within true crime. And I will say, I started in a bro culture. Like, my initial fame, which has since faded, I am not famous, don't get me wrong. I rode the coattails, of a big-time NFL guy who's one of the biggest sports talk show personalities out there right now. Barstool Sports, which you probably know being Coastal. It's such a bro culture. And, man, you had to be in the gym all the time. You couldn't let that gut go, all that. Like, I think this the culture within true crime, this community and this network, I could see them very much gravitating toward your story. And the two of you, just this dynamic of husband and wife, like it's very cool for me to partner with Jessica because I love the contrast. You guys are married and doing it. So Shannon, when he was doing this, when you met him, I assume by what you said earlier, or?
No, he was just on Twitter writing jokes.
Okay.
To, blow off steam. We were both going through a divorce at the time. And so it was a good outlet. No, he was working in insurance for a long, long time.
till 5 months ago.
Yeah. So he was not doing this. This was a total surprise, and it's been just a wild ride, but it's great.
Yeah. So Jay, is it fair to say that because of Shannon, you felt comfortable or empowered enough to go out on a limb here and do this thing and quit your, I'm assuming, insurance, very secure job, because even if one company goes down, there's a lot of insurance companies out there and a lot of positions that are always available, according to my LinkedIn. But so is that true? Did you draw from her energy and the comfort?
1,000%. I couldn't be doing this if it wasn't for her. There's just no way without having her support. And honest, so what happened basically 5 months ago, the plan was, you know, I talked to her and she knew I was miserable doing 18 years. I was a bodily injury examiner. So I'm the guy, when you get into an accident, you get hurt, you slip and fall, you get an attorney. I'm the guy at the insurance company who's like, no, this is not worth as much as you think it is. So like, I got to deal with attorneys who are yelling at me. I got dealt with, and I'm in corporate America. So I got my boss yelling at me, and it just, I was miserable. And, you know, I talked to Shannon, and without her support, I couldn't do it. Cause she's just like, listen, we can't do this anymore. Cause you're miserable. Basically what happened was the idea was I was going to resell, because I kind of, as a side gig, I resell stuff like vintage toys and stuff. And it was just like a side gig. And I was like, I'm going to just do a full time and see what I could do. Take money from my 401k and just do this and see what I can do with it. And what happened was I started tweeting during the Murdaugh trial, and my tweets started doing really good. And I went from like 300 followers to like 5,000 or 6,000. And folks are like, you should have a YouTube channel. You should do this. And, you know, that's kind of what it led to. And, you know, if it wasn't for Shannon, there's just no way that I could have done it when having her support.
You know, aside from all the court watching that you do and the commentary, what is it about true crime for kind of both of you? Why true crime? Why did you guys decide this is what you're going to go all in on?
Well, it's, you know, I'll let Shannon tell the story, but I did not watch true crime until Shannon said to me, hey, check out this documentary on HBO about this attorney in South Carolina. Before that, I was not at all. I am new to the game. I know like nothing, but Shannon, I mean, you could tell about what you've been watching true crime for how long?
Well, I pretty much cut my teeth on OJ because my mom was very into true crime. And so I would come home from elementary school. My mom had recorded the beginning of the trial. And then so we would watch till the end. We lived in Kansas. So, you know, we'd have a couple hours behind them. We'd watch till the end of the trial that day. And then she'd rewind and let us watch the beginning of the trial. So I really got obsessed at that age, a very young age. I was like 10 or 11. So I've always been super interested in true crime. And I always wanted to get, you know, like on Netflix viewing nights, it'd be like, I'd want Jay to watch some true crime documentary with me. And he's like, oh my God, please no more murder. Can we have like a Christmas without murder? Can we do, you know? And I just knew with the Murdaugh thing that, you know, some of the documentaries that we had been watching lately, like the Tiger, what was it? The
Tiger King.
Exotic or whatever. I was like, this like has enough that you're going to be interested. You're going to think this is interesting. So I finally got him to sit down and watch it with me. And he just, and that was a while before the trial. And he really got interested in it and would ask me like for updates of what was going on. And I'd say, oh, you know, the trial's coming up. So it was just a moment of bliss, pure bliss for me, because I finally had hooked him into my interest. And we finally had something to discuss where he wasn't like, oh no, not murder.
Well, and then, you know, it's, and then when I went into it on Twitter, I think the reason that I, you know, that it struck well, and it's similar to what you guys are doing, I was adding comedy to it, like not obviously like just like you guys. We know we talked about this. There's that line where there's the victims and you never want to like, you know, there's no joking about that. But I was tweeting about things where it's other people weren't really, I don't know, pointing out or stuff. I think just about just different things that like there's comedic aspects to like a trial or just in general. And then I think that struck a chord with people. And then, you know, once we started getting popular, this group that we have is so unbelievably supportive. I think you guys have seen like they come, we're sending them your way, and they're just so amazing. And they told both of us, like, you guys got to do this. And that's kind of where we're at now. So it's been a wild ride, I'll tell you.
Tell anyone who's listening what an average day with the Shaming a Jay YouTube is like, if they want to tune in. Like, tell us what they can expect.
Well, when I started this, I was doing major trials, like big trials, and just watching them all the way through. We started, actually, it's funny, a civil case. We started with the Gwyneth Paltrow trial, if you remember that. And that was just wild on its end. And that was kind of nice because at the end, it was like a skiing, you know, thing where, you know, at the end, no one was murdered or something like that, you know. But then we've done some major trial. You know, we've done the YNW Melly trial. We've done Zach Latham. We did a bunch of trials. And basically, I would, you know, wake up and start when it starts, and I'm just watching and commenting as it's going on. I, you know, usually I'm not really interrupting much, but once there's a break, I'll talk about what, you know, what we're doing. But since then we've started doing more. We just started like a week or two ago doing like district court, superior court, bond court. And it's just interesting because it's rapid fire judges calling up defendants where they're, you know, you saw him one clip, but this one gentleman, it was a Zoom court, and he's on his phone, and he goes and he's showing his wife in the bathroom. It was wild. And then there was another guy who went to jail because he said his brother, who he lives with, took his truck, so he threw his crackers at him. And that's why, according to him, that's why he was in bond court. So that's been fun because I call it court hopping, and that's what we'll do when you guys are on. We're just jumping and seeing all these interesting stories. And then basically I do it from 9 or 10 in the morning till 5 or 6. And then at night, sometimes we do interviews, but that's kind of what we do.
One of my favorite things to do back in my detective days was, like, let's say on this particular day, I needed to get the judge to sign a search warrant for me. So sometimes you just have to sit in the back of the courtroom and wait for them to get done with whatever business was at hand. And man, there was a judge in Shelby County, Indiana, that he did a lot of the deadbeat dad child support stuff, and he would lay into these deadbeat dads, and it was a show in and of itself. This dude talk about how he doesn't have the money to pay his $120 a week or whatever, and then the judge just undressing him line by line. How much did those Jordans you're wearing cost, sir? And I just loved it. So you tapping into that, I think, is remarkable because people don't get to see that. You know, it's not an everyday thing that's in our world, but it's going on all the time, every day, 8 to 4 in your area. So what a brilliant idea, this court hopping thing. Shannon, do you jump in there sometimes in the court hopping?
Yeah, I've only been on one episode of court hopping so far, but I plan to do more. I like to be on, especially at night. We do some themed shows at night that are more geared towards my strengths. I'm actually a mental health professional, and so we do a Friday night show sometimes called Friday Night Psych, where we take a phenomenon or a defendant or something like that, and I kind of address it from the side of mental health.
Well, that's great. That kind of fits with this lifelong, if I want to say fandom, but interest into true crime. Do you get to, do you like a general practice, or do you get to focus sometimes on criminal psychology?
Right now I'm not practicing, except for I have one small group that I do, but I did do juvenile crime growing up, through being a baby therapist until later on. And that was something that really stuck with me. Specifically, I worked with female juvenile offenders, and I mean, it's all human behavior. So it's just so interesting to me.
Well, and, you know, I kind of just had this thought the other day, is similar to being a comedian and a therapist, or, you know, or even a journalist, you're trying to get behind what is going on in their head. And that to me is sometimes more interesting than just trying to get on, whether it's the judge or it's just getting that behind, like, think, like, what are they thinking, and trying to like spin it. Like, everyone's going to have their different version of it, obviously, but I think that's, you know, what's why people like watching this stuff, in my opinion.
Oh, the psychology behind anything is so fascinating. That's what I loved about detective work, was like, to get a confession, just having to sit long enough and speak with them and make a quick study of what they need to hear from you, whether it be moral justification for what they did or whatever, because everybody needs a reason to put themselves in jail, you know, too. It's not an easy thing to do. So, you know, I don't think people realize it's just a big psychological case study every time you sit down. It's like, I got to figure out what makes this person tick, what they need to hear from me in order to get over this hump and tell me the truth, even though it's to their detriment. And you're right. And it's like that with comedy, too. I mean, you got to right away assess this crowd. Fortunately, I'm the guy that goes last. So I get to see the other comics before me and how the crowd reacts to them and make
and
it.
And they're quick. Also way drunker.
Yeah. Make it quick. That's a good, like right away, I'm like, this crowd's it's a drinking crowd. By the time I get up there, you know, I'm going to have to dirty it up a little bit. I'm going to have to go a little easier, a little less cerebral, you know, but I love just studying people. It's one of my favorite things. And we all have to do that in what we do. And really, I mean, everybody should be using that in some fashion in their everyday life.
I mean, but even like in telling your jokes, right, you're trying to tell it in a way that someone's not thinking, right? That's the whole, mm-hmm. That's what makes it funny is like, oh, wow, I never thought about it that way a lot of times. And I feel like that's what people like to connect with.
Oh, yeah, because laughter, it pops harder when you are connecting the dots yourself. If I give you the answer, I give you the punchline just too easily, it's less of a laugh than when you instantly connect those dots yourself in an instant. Yeah.
Right.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
And it's very similar in journalism, too. Todd and I have talked about the difference between my interviewing style and something where he could interrogate someone because he's reading signs of how they're answering something. And so when I'm interviewing someone, I'm reading where they're going with their story so that I know what to follow up with them. So in a way, I'm trying to assess what's coming before they say it to get to the real meat of the story. I think that the psychological behind the scenes thing when it comes to true crime is one of the most fascinating things. It's how you tell the story of the victim. It's how you look at their assailant. It goes into all that, and it's trying to figure out what makes someone tick. And I think that's where the fascination to serial killers and true crime in general comes in. I don't think the majority of true crime fans have a lust for serial killers. There are some out there, and I don't.
It's this fascination with people that are different from us. I mean, that's why we're fascinated by them, because even on the lower level, these are people that are deviating from morality, which we don't typically do, right? And to the higher echelon level, evil, which we it's hard for us to even comprehend how someone partakes in that or how someone operates from a perspective of evil. So, yeah, it's no fun to watch people like ourselves, you know, for one.
Right. Well, you know, it makes me think of your first episode of your pod when you were talking about the 5 days. There was a 5-day gap, and you're like, why you got into a fight? Why aren't you sending flowers or why aren't you sending super? And I initially, when you just mentioned the gap, like I was like, I wasn't really thinking about that. But like, that's one of those things where like when someone says it, like, it's like shit. Yeah. Like I would have sent like what happened there? So like, you're just trying to like break all that stuff down. And I think that's, like you said, that's why people want to.
You would have sent flowers. You wouldn't have sent flowers.
No, I don't send flowers. I
maybe a bowl of soup. Come on.
Yes.
Something.
I love this. Something. So, Shady, you're not a flower person, I take it.
I mean, they die. So it's like such a waste of money.
That's what I have always said. My husband bought me flowers once and I was like, that's sweet, but don't do it again because they die in a couple of days and yeah. I have nothing left. Just give me a card.
I love that my wife doesn't like flowers because, you know, for a guy, very few of us do the flowers like do anything for our lives. So just being around, you know, I like plants that come back every year and pretty up my backyard. But yeah, so, okay, well, that's interesting. So you're a more practical type. Show me your love by giving me something I can use. And
Shannon will tell you, I'm always trying to think of something like, our last anniversary, I got a Counting Crows tickets because that's our favorite. Like we like the experience of doing something. That's usually what we're trying to do if we're gonna, you know, get ourselves gifts.
Nice.
That's exactly what we do. We always, whatever anniversary or gift it is, we just try to plan something to spend some time together. We did Garth Brooks last year.
Oh,
that was nice.
Just let me say, I don't know that there's a better live concert.
Oh, so good. It was my very first. I've been wanting to go my whole life. Mm. So I was like, we're going. We drove to North Carolina. It was awesome.
Yeah.
So
what in your typical day? So Jay, I'm guessing, you know, obviously this has become a full-time job for you and you work from home. Shannon, do you also work from home? Are you at home a lot?
Yeah, I'm basically at home. I have many side gigs ever since the pandemic, with art, and we also have 50-50 custody. We both have children from our previous marriage. Jay has 50-50 custody of our boys. So there has to be a driver. And so I'm the driver. I take, you know, and make sure the kids get to school and home from school. And so wherever I can fit side gigs in, I do some dog walking. I do, you know, a little bit of social media for people. I do anything that I can just get my hands on quickly and make a little money to keep us going. So yeah, I'm home most of the day if I'm not driving kids around.
Well, and I'll say this, since we decided to kind of go all in on this, Shannon, she does our thumbnails, she does our graphics, she does our merch, some of the best merch in the biz. She is like, I just said it the other day, like, how lucky am I that Shannon is so talented as this. Also, she's in there moderating our chats. You know, she's checking out the chat. So she does so much. Once we decide we're doing this all in, you know, and like I said, I took money from my 401k and we were going all the way with this. I said, listen, like, cause she did more stuff. And I'm like, I need your help here. And like, she's the queen. She crushes it. And we could, like I said before, couldn't do it without her. There's no way.
I was just going to bring that up because her graphics are incredible. She's like your own in-house PR marketing right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Very lucky. So if anyone needs any graphics done, this is your girl.
That's right.
Yes, absolutely.
I love that this is a family business, you know, because I'm trying right now. I'm running through my head. How would my wife and I be as a work duo if we shared the same career in a way? And I don't think it would go as well as yours, I'm gonna be honest. Like, she's not into this part of my life so much. She loves Jessica, she's a big advocate for her, and she, you know, she'll watch true crime documentaries and stuff. Some of them will grab her interest and whatever, but podcasting, she's just never. She used to think it was the silliest thing when I used to fight so hard to get her to date me back in the day. And I was with Barstool Sports, you know, we were the biggest thing in Indianapolis. I'm like, why? Hey, come on over here. And she was like, go away. So it was almost a turn off this podcast thing for a while. I want to ask you this, you guys, because I can tell you're both very fun people and you're at home a lot and you know, wonderful parents, and you've built this life to where you can give as much of yourself to all these things, which that's one beautiful thing that's happened since the pandemic, is that we do have these mechanisms to be at home more and work and still make money in these things, because it does put us in the people that we love's lives more. So what's the dumbest fight you think you've ever had over just, I don't want to hear about the serious ones if there's been any of those, just the dumbest thing somebody's done.
I could tell you, we just had a little bit of one because we went away for a week long vacation, and then I beat Shannon at mini golf, and she got very upset about it. It was fine, and it was all good because she was winning, and then I got a hole in one. And then but this is the problem. This is, I secretly recorded her when she was kind of getting a little angry at me, and then I posted it, and then that was all know that was a major mistake.
That's
big
time.
Well, I wasn't angry with you for getting the hole in one. In fact, I was your biggest supporter when you got the hole in one. I was like, yes, babe, that was awesome. Mm. You probably didn't hear because you were screaming out to the whole facility about the hole in one.
I was not screaming. I did not. No.
Yeah, you were. So I can understand why you didn't hear me then. But like the whole, like when you were like, you know, talking about your comeback and all of these things every whole since then, did bring me back to my youth. I had a very, very competitive brother, and it really was not fun to play games with him ever. He knows that. That was what I was expressing displeasure about, which then Jay turned into content about me being a sore loser, basically, like, which really was completely the opposite of what was actually occurring, which was him, you know, rubbing it in our faces that he got the hole in one, only person to get a hole in one in our whole family. He made sure everyone knew that. So it was a little bit misrepresentative. And that's what I was upset about, because I really don't care about if I lose a mini golf game, and that it was made that I looked like I cared. That kind of torqued me off.
That's where the prank goes a little too far. I'm guilty of the same thing, Jay. But I do love, I have to say, up to the point maybe where you crossed the line, I do love that you were chronicling like your own legacy, your own sports legacy within the mini golf.
You have to. You get a hole in one, you have to let the folks know. I mean,
it doesn't happen a lot.
And initially my plan was, because my initial tweet that I tweeted, because I was thinking about this, I'm like, is it really a family vacation until you have a fight at one of the local, you know, mini golf places? Because I feel like it happens. It's happened to, you know, when I was growing up, we'd find a mini golf place and somehow there would be a fight. And also I feel like the moms were always better. I felt like it was an advantage somehow to have the pocketbook, because my mom always won and Shannon was winning until I got that hole in one, and then it just all went crazy from there. So.
It's not a vacation unless there's one argument, one fight. I firmly believe that, and it's almost like to the point, you know, I've been trying to work out with my wife, like if we start to get in one here, but we have a vacation coming, I'm like, you know what? Let's just hold this for vacation. This would be a great fight to have on vacation. Let's not waste it at home, you know.
It's true.
So you have two boys.
We're about to have three teenagers. Right now we have a 14-year-old and two 12-year-olds, and it's about to be a 15-year-old and two 13-year-olds. So buckle up, buttercups. We're about to go on a ride. Or we already started, actually.
Yeah, I will pray for you.
Thank you.
And they, you know, I was saying we went for on a road trip, and like they were doing I Spy, and they were like, oh, I spy something gray. And then my other son was like, Dad's hair. And then they're like, oh, roasted. So like, that's what we're dealing with here.
Oh man, what a challenge. That's those ages, you guys are, you're already busy, but you're gonna be so much more busy. You're doubling duty. Wow, that's brave. But awesome too, right? It's awesome. Can you fill us in a little bit more about, if you don't mind, how you met? I know you said you knew him from his social media, but who was the first to kind of just slide in the other's DMs and propose?
This is a good story, babe. You want to tell it?
Yeah, we'll tell it together. So I was really, just one day I was really upset by, I don't know, I used my Twitter as like my place to scream into the void.
Yes.
And I was really upset when Miley Cyrus's Wrecking Ball came out, and everyone was down on Miley, and they were like, you're, you know, a whore, blah, blah, blah. You're on this wrecking ball. And I was like, so happy that social media did not exist when I was in my 20s, because I did stupid, crazy dancing on bars things too. And, you know, I didn't have the entire world telling me what a bad person I was. So I was basically trying to find any pro Miley tweets that I could retweet, because I wanted to like curate a timeline of pro Miley business. I don't know.
God, you're so much better at social media than I am, by the way. what a project you put on yourself.
I did. So I would go, I was going to, but I wanted them to be funny too. Mm-hmm. So I was going to people that I knew. I did not have a big Twitter following. I had like four or 5,000 followers. And Jay had like 32,000 followers. So I find that Jay has actually, I search up, you know, some of my favorite tweeters and Miley Cyrus. And I find that Jay has like three or four tweets about Miley that are super positive. And I was like, yes, yes. So I retweet them like rapid fire in a row. I follow him. I've never like, you know, interacted with him, nothing besides retweeting him. He's never retweeted me. And all of a sudden in my DMs, I get this DM from him and he's like, what the fuck are you doing? I don't know if we can say that on your show.
Oh, yeah, you can say it.
but then I was like, oh. I was like, hi, I really like those tweets or something. I said something stupid and lame. And he was like, why are you doing that?
Well, was it? I came from the same thing. I'm like, these people were just going off it. I'm like, guys, were you guys 20 years old? Like, relax. And I just kind of was just, that was kind of, you know, what made me tweet all the things. And I saw, and they, honestly, they didn't do very well, the tweets about Miley. I don't know why, like they weren't like hitting. And all of a sudden they're coming up in my mention, my interactions, and I'm like, notifications. I'm like, what is going on? And that's why I messaged her. And a little thing about the story, this, by the way, this happened in 2015 and Shannon was in Kansas and I was in New York. And you know what happened in 2015? The Kansas City Royals played the New York. We're both huge baseball fans. And that was the year that the Royals just happened to make the World Series and the Mets just happened to make the World Series. So it was a wild series of events. You know, unfortunately, the Mets lost because they're terrible. But we met each other and that was, you know, that's the story.
Wow. So Miley Cyrus brought you together.
She sure
Miley
did.
Miley Cyrus and the MLB.
Wow.
And just small market baseball teams. At that time, the Mets were a small market team. They're not anymore, but.
That's incredible. I mean, of all the things to bring two people together, you know, baseball and Miley Cyrus, like your interest category would be like, if I was like, hey, I need to boost this post on Facebook, let me go through interest categories. Let me boost this to people who love Miley Cyrus and love professional baseball and be like, okay, you're going to reach six people.
You're gonna read just Jay and Shannon.
Yeah, it would just be you two.
It's gonna be us two. That's it.
You'd be like, you could have just sent this to my DM, Todd. You didn't have to. Yeah, that's great.
I can't tell you how thankful I am that social media did not exist when I was in college. Yeah, and none of that exists. Like, everything I did back then, if there's no photos, it just didn't exist because social media didn't exist. So.
And if there is a photo, it's like super blurry and from like a long way away and turning orange. So soon it will not exist anymore.
That's so great. I can't imagine the pressure kids have now. And maybe that's why in many ways, you know, starting with the younger half of the millennial generation, they were a little more responsible than people in my generation anyway. We were wild, but you know, we were in the dark. Nobody knew what we were doing. Everybody knows what they're doing. So I guess it caused them to act a little more civilized.
That leads to our, you know, we had to sit them down and guys, what you're doing, right? Everything you do is permanent forever. Like that's a talk. No one told our parents didn't have to tell us that. Like, you know, we're telling them like, guys, any Snapchat, you think it's there, pal. It's not, you know, also even in these, you know, we watch these trials now and it's like in Discovery and all of a sudden it comes and they're like these Snapchats and these people are like, wait, that's they're subpoenaing it and they're getting your phone call record. They're getting everything, guys. Like nothing is not recorded. Like that's what I think we have, babe. There wasn't after a trial where one of them were like, guys, it's literally if they're going to bring you to court and they're going to find everything that you think, I don't care if you put it on airplane mode. I don't care if you put, you know, whatever trick you think you're doing, they have it. The lords of the, you know, internet, they have it.
I think during the Murdaugh trial, when they showed all the text history of Alec Murdaugh's, and you know, the Forge man was in there, and he was sending bikini pictures of women who were not his wife to the all guys group.
Yeah, there was like an all boys chat, and
an all boys chat. And I mean, when that happened, I think I told Jay, I was like, we need to tell them that, you know, like anything can bring them down because, you know, the Forge guy, Michael, whatever his name was, he was pretty popular with the ladies and people liked him until that came out. And then he was like immediately dead to all of us. We were like, you jerk, you're just taking these surreptitious bikini photos and sending them around to these other old men. Gross.
Right.
So, I mean, he was like a darling and then he fell right away. So,
but that was just, you know, that's one of the things about watching these trials that I always find interesting is the folks that aren't really in it, but all of a sudden they are in it because they sent this text. Like he had nothing, like he was just saying this text. And now, you know, a year or two later, he's in a murder trial. You know what I mean? Like, it's always interesting how like the web encapsulate folks, like even just some of the, you know, the work people who work for Alex Murdaugh or just in general, these the web brings these people in. And now all of a sudden they're on live TV in front of, you know, or particularly the Murdaugh case, like millions of people are watching this. And it was like, he's like, this guy's thinking, damn, I was just sharing a text to the group chat. And now it's like, it's wild how that's like in this day and age with these trials, how that happens now.
It's such a weird phenomenon in today's world that one of your best friends, you could discover tomorrow that they murdered their entire family. And maybe the first thought that comes to mind about the horrific nature of that is, oh shit, remember that text thread 2 years ago when we were in Vegas? Like, that text thread might come up in my friend's murder trial, you know?
I'm going to have to testify. Yeah.
Like, oh, I shouldn't have liked, you know, whatever. So it's wild to even think about. But yeah, you're right. There were so many things. Would you say that in recent history, that trial was the first to really encapsulate everything that's going on in our world right now, because social media was such a part of it? There was old family legacy brought in, but there was homophobia brought in because of one of the sons, like all this stuff. Like, it pretty much was just a little bit of everything. I think it might be the first one that really dragged everything together as a whole.
I agree. Absolutely. It had everything. It had, you know, it had drug use. It had, you know, obviously the murders, but and it was like a month long. It was like it was like this saga. And like you said, it had everything. And I think that's why it was, you know, it connected with so many people, like not just in South Carolina, like everyone was watching that everywhere, like, or at least a large amount of people are watching it. And I absolutely think you're right. It had every little, you know, piece of everything. It had the Snapchat, it had social media, it had all of it, that I think that's why everyone connected.
Oh yeah. To it. Like the Snapchat, I can't refresh my memory that with the Snapchat, wasn't there something about him, it showed that he changed clothes or something at one particular
moment? So there was one Snapchat where he's out with his son and they're like playing with like trees. But the biggest thing wasn't even, it was a recording of they're at this kennel and they hear a dog, and this is where when he was not supposed to be there. They hear him talking.
That's
all of a sudden, they find it on his son's phone and he was completely unaware of it. So he had told this story forever, like a million times. And all of a sudden there's this video he had no idea that's on his son's phone. And it was just, and like you now that they're showing that video, like in front of everyone, it was a wild case. I mean, and now that apparently they're appealing it and there's a motion because apparently there was some jury tampering allegedly. So it's going to keep going.
Oh, come on. Wow.
We could have the whole thing over again.
Yeah. It's very possible that it's just, there's a press conference today that they're going to be talking about that.
It's going to be incredible. Well, I tell you, they, the whole family story, you know, with this generation after generation of bullies that bullied an entire region with wealth, power, and influence, it is incredible. But then to see it come to an end merely because this old dude doesn't understand technology, like literally that's what right. got him in trouble. Like, this could have went on for centuries if we would never improved technologically. But it's like
they even had his steps. You know, one of the big things was they had his, because he had his phone when he went in his house, and they had his steps, and that was a huge thing when he was being crossed. They're like, "What were you doing here, Creighton Waters?" The prosecutor's like, "What were you doing, jumping jacks? Were you running in place?" Because he alleged that he was just on his couch and just like hanging out. And he's like, "But there's like all these steps. What were you doing?" Like, he had no idea. He probably had no idea. He's not thinking that this phone is going to calculate all his steps. Like, the amount of data that is collected is just wild. And each trial that we watch, it's more like the steps. Like, who's thinking that, like, he's got his phone in his pocket and like he's doing all these steps. And that's something that was a key part of the trial.
It's so
and that
accurate.
It keeps the orientation, that just blew my mind. So they were using that as like, okay, this is the person looking at the phone. It unlocks with your face. I mean, all of that is saved. And I mean, I really didn't even want to look at my phone after that for a while.
Right. I was just going to say, that's like creepy.
I haven't committed any crimes, but it was just frightening.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it came down to. The minute-to-minute timeline that they were able to put together with the phones. And I, you know, I tweeted about this. they basically put the time of death based on the fact that Paul, he didn't use his phone. That was the time of death was not established. And, you know, Maggie was the time it was, they stopped using their phone. And I tweeted, I was like, yeah, you could tell I'm dead. If my phone just all of a sudden goes off, I'm probably dead. Like if it just goes off for, and like, it doesn't come on for like forever, basically. Yeah, that's accurate. And I think the jury agreed. And most people would agree these days, if your phone just all of a sudden mysteriously goes off for no reason and doesn't come back on, something, you know, and then you're dead at that time. Yeah, that's probably the accurate time of death. And that's how they got it in that case. And it's just wild.
It's so incredible to think that the biggest thing that's putting people away right now, people that have committed criminal acts, is there because of companies wanting to sell us shit. Like everything that's captured on your phone is captured so that they can study your behavioral habits and for your demographic and where you are in the world. So they know what ads to burst to your phone and your Instagram feed and all that. But because that exists, law enforcement learned how to get in there and use it for themselves. And it's so fascinating because if we try to create a tool like that for the purpose of, you know, just tracking people and knowing who's doing what, that, you know, no, that's Big Brother. But we're all cool right. with it because, you know what? Yeah, those are cool shoes you just sent me. And I like that. Yeah,
exactly.
I like
that
you
totally
don't
right.
you never send me something I don't like, and it's magical and I love it. So right. so I am very for it. And you know, it's happening to catch people for murder. So it's kind of cool, but also kind of scary. Like if somebody wanted to do some dirty business, they really could. And I'm sure it happens. We have the CIA.
And not even to mention these criminals, that the biggest snitch is Google. Like these idiots are Googling stuff that they, and they're not even, I don't know if they're not putting it on private or what it is, but they're like, we watched a trial where they Googled the murder weapon and how to open the door. And even Rex Sherman's coming up where he's Googling himself, looking for stuff about like Googling the Long Island serial killer, like Google, like these idiots. I mean, I guess that's why they're caught, is because like, it's just another, the Google is like the biggest snitch, you know, yeah. around recently. It seems like it's wild.
And you're right. If you just turn your phone off, now you're suspicious because we, as detectives, look at your profile of life. What are your daily habits as far as usage on your phone and the behavior surrounding it? And all of a sudden, the first time in 3 years since you owned your phone, it was off for 16 hours. All right. You murdered somebody, you know.
Exactly. It's so true.
Yeah. I was a candidate for this reality show, this competition show, where it was a neat concept. I'll go ahead and say it because obviously they didn't hire me. So if anyone steals the idea, go for it. But it was, there would be two married couples and they each would have to propose to me their plan for murdering the other. And my job was to like make fun of them, kind of roast them on, you know, well, that's stupid because of this or whatever. So during my audition, which was over Zoom with this producer, she asked me, well, what would be the perfect way to murder somebody? And I said, well, first thing is you're going to have to get rid of your phone, but you can't just turn it off. I explained that whole thing like we just did. I said, so what I would do is I would actually drop my phone in the toilet and let it go down. But here's the thing. You can't just tell the cops that you dropped it in the toilet because you could have just dropped it in a glass of water. So you're going to have to do that after you've actually pooped, because it's going to have to be your poop. You wouldn't drop it in somebody else's poop. And then you could hand them the phone and they could test and then your story's valid. But that's a lot of work, right? Like you would literally.
That is a lot of work.
Yeah.
Did you just give all the listeners an alibi of dropping your phone in your own poop?
Yeah. I mean, the best I can come up with.
Now when we find the phone poop murderer, we'll know where they got that idea.
We're all going to get subpoenaed because we listened to this.
Right. Todd's an accessory.
I just, damn, we just, our digital footprint, we're stuck.
It'll live on forever.
Oh, man. Well, you guys, I mean, you have been so awesome. Like, I'm so glad that we've come to know you through our network of friends. And I just look so forward to continuing the relationship. I want to talk to you guys every week, but we have crimes to do in between shows. But definitely let's do another Across the Table sometime in the future. And hell, we could go on live whenever we want and do whatever we want. But please keep us in mind because we really enjoy both of you.
Absolutely. We love you guys.
Absolutely. We had a great time.
Well, I'm just so excited that you guys are on here. And I cannot encourage people enough to go and watch you. I was watching you before we got on here doing your live court hopping. And the girl, all of a sudden, the charges are being read. And it was like, oh, and when police went to search your car, they found a little bit of cocaine. And you were like, cocaine?
So yeah, she was just, like 18. I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, she's got a long road. So, but anyway, I encourage you to go check them out and we'll be on there from time to time.
We love this. So thank you so much. And I think we talked about this, but our groups aligned. So it's awesome. And you guys, you have an open invite. You ever want to come on, for sure.
Awesome. The Shaming of Jay on YouTube, at The Shaming of Jay on social media, and at Shannon Shaming. Get involved. Bring them into your lives because it will certainly be better for it. Thanks, guys.
So Jay and Shannon Shaming are quite the powerhouse. I can't wait to see where they go next. And we were even on their court hopping YouTube show, which was a ridiculously good time.
I had more fun on that show than a baby in a room full of wooden spoons. No bullshit. I think it's the greatest thing going on YouTube right now. Don't get me wrong, I love watching two grown-ass dudes take turns slapping each other in the face. But court hopping is better. Damn, I love hanging out with them.
Agreed. And if you want to hang with them, follow them on social media at Shannon Shaming and at The Shaming of Jay. Subscribe to their YouTube channel at The Shaming of Jay. And do yourself a favor and become part of their fiercely loyal fan base who've dubbed themselves as hashtag JBO Nation. I proudly consider myself part of that community now.
Me too.
We'll be back with a new case next week, so get your shovels and your notebooks ready.
In the meantime, if you have a case you'd like us to dig into, submit it through the case submission link on our website, investigatorspodcast.com. That's also where you'll find the show notes and links for the shamings and a link to our guest appearance on Court Hopping with Jay, not to brag, as well as all the cases we featured thus far.
If you like this show, please tell your friends and take a minute to rate and write a review. We appreciate your feedback and your stars. Until next week, take care and take care of each other.
And most importantly, remember, mini golf is supposed to be fun. So if you get a hole in one, don't parade around the course and flaunt it in your spouse's face until she wants to shove her putter up your fart hole. Because if you do, you might have to deal with us. Because we're the investigators!
I came from the mud, there's dirt on my hands. Strong like a tree, there's roots where I stand. Oh, I've been running from the law. Hope they won't shoot me down soon. They sing gone to sleepless night. Try to catch me howling at the moon.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.